Welcome to episode 271 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to talk about Trey's top 10 2013 parenting crash and burns. That's right, we're going to talk about how I have dropped the ball this year, what I've learned, what hopefully you can learn as well. Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent. There is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is Wednesday, December the 4th, 2013. It is middle of the week Wednesday. So I thought if we're going to hit the middle of the week, we got to do a special topic for today. So our topic for today is going to be Trey's top 10 2013 parenting crash and burns. Yeah, that's right. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the things that I've screwed up. We always talk a lot about getting it right. And the things that we do to get it right, and the things that we practice at the Casa de Gibson to get it right. But we're going to be real straight with you guys today. I'm going to go as far to say that maybe for every time I get it right, I get it wrong another one. And it's a part of that learning process, and we have to learn to be honest about these things. Before we get into that, let's jump into our quick housekeeping. If you guys want to get notified of any new episodes, just jump over to thefamilypodcast.com, enter your name and your email address, get put on a list to make sure that you never miss out on that one episode. If you just would have heard it, could have changed everything. Guys, also don't forget, you can come check us out on Facebook. We have great discussions over there, and we throw out some good memes, some things that get us thinking, and some things, as a good friend of mine posted just this evening, some things that even make us pee our pants because they're so funny. Come check them out over at Facebook. Also, guys, if you want to support the show, 30 cents per episode. That's right. If you think you're getting three dimes out of every one of these episodes, you can support the show. $5 a month. You can do it just as simple as that. Trey, does that really help? You have no idea how far it goes. We have made sure that to offer you guys the maximum amount of value that we can in this show, we have lowered the overhead cost as much as we can to make sure that it didn't come at a huge cost. So, guys, consider supporting the show, helping us carry this out. Three dimes if you feel like you're getting it. Last, guys, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, anything you want to hear on this show, you can go to thefamilypodcast.com. Over the right-hand side, you'll see where it says Ask Trey a Question. Click on that. As long as you got a microphone connected to your computer, you can ask me a question just like you would on a phone. But, hey, Trey, I don't have that. All I've got is my phone with me today. No problem. Call us at 661-PARENT-0. Again, that number is 661-PARENT-0. Nobody will answer that line. You'll just leave a direct voicemail through Google Voicemail. We'll see about smacking that up on the show. Answer your question. Guys, you can also go to thefamilypodcast.com. Click on the contact us page or connect to us on Facebook or Twitter, by the way. I may have just offended some of you guys, some of you Twitter nights. All right, guys, with all of that out of the way today, let's jump into our topic for today, which again is Trey's top 10 2013 parenting crash and burns. I want to take some time today just to kind of review my top screw ups from this last year. I want to make sure that I'm very clear here as a disclaimer. This is not some kind of low self-esteem. Oh, Trey's beating himself up. It's not an issue of that at all. I don't have some kind of low self-esteem. I don't see failures as a terrible thing. Failure is a big part of a human condition. It's a part of the humanity that we all carry, is that we screw up and we make mistakes. And the worst mistake that we make as parents when it comes to our mistakes is not taking the time to reflect on them and understand that they were made and understand that we did the very best we could with what we knew. Now, that's not an excuse. This is not an excuse to say, oh, I just don't know any better, right? This is not something like that. That's not what we're talking about here. But we're talking about taking a look at our screw-ups, reviewing those things and saying, you know what? I sucked that up. There's a power in acknowledging that we're not as good as parents as we thought we were. Now, again, this is not some kind of low self-esteem type of thing. What we're talking about is just a fundamental acknowledgement that there are certain areas and aspects of our lives and our skill sets that we've got to get better. And one of the primary goals of the Family Podcast Network, whenever we first put this together, was to provide a non-judgmental place to come where we can sit down and talk about being a parent. I want you guys to understand, I'm not a parenting expert. All I am is a guy who is doing the best he can with what he's got, who is desperately ravenous to learn more and more about parenting, who is just absolutely in the hugest sense wanting to grow himself and do better. Do I screw up? Yeah, absolutely. Do I make big screw-ups? Mm-hmm. My wife can attest to that. But the reality is, this is a place where we call together, where we bring ourselves together as parents to say, listen, no judgment. Let's talk about how we get better. Let's talk about how we can do this a little bit more. We wanted to make sure that we had a place where we embrace our screw-ups. Again, not in the sense that we put them out there as some kind of bad, look, I am not a perfect parent, I'm awesome. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is a place where we say, gosh dang it, that is an area that I want to be doing better at, and I'm not. Let's figure out how. So again, this is not in some kind of like, let's accept us where we are and just stay here. But we do this as a way that we can figure out how are we going to take our parenting to that next level. And the reality is we cannot. I mean, we cannot get better if we are not honest about ourselves. And let me tell you this, more importantly, we can't influence other parents if others are not aware of our humanness as well. Because let's be honest, when we're open, whenever you ever had somebody who's just blatantly honest, we have a tendency to want to be more honest with others when people are honest. And I think it's powerful, it's valuable. We've got to get to the point to where we can do this. So today, I want you to get to hear all of my crash and burns from 2013. So we're going to take a little bit of a retrospective look. What are the things that I picked up and picked out that I thought to myself, man, I did not do what I said I was going to do or what I wanted to do in these areas. It's time to get better. So we're going to talk a little bit about some crash and burns.
Crash and burn. Crash and burn.
Yeah, that's right. This is a little segment that we're affectionately going to call the crash and burn. We're going to go a little bit over what are some of the crash and burns that Trey has done. I don't know why I'm using this 1970s voice, but you know, baby, I feel like I gotta. You gotta talk about your crash and burns. You gotta do it like this. Guys, I have no excuse for what just happened. All right, guys, let's jump into our topic here. So I'm going to walk you guys through my top 10 list here of what I have not done this last week, starting with number one. I played way too little with my kids. Here at the Family Podcast Network, we highly and strongly advocate for play. There's a lot of reasons for this. Fundamentally, we believe that here that play is single-handedly the best things that kids can do. We often, as parents, see it as just kind of like an accessory to what a kid needs. So they've got their, you know, their basic five survival needs, but then play is just kind of the extra. We believe here that it is vital. It is fundamental that with play is where you see kids begin to practice for real life. And it is that practice that is so invaluable, and they grow and the things that are the most effective for them, the things that they learn that are the most valuable come through play. And so we don't just see it as a nice thing or a nice afterthought. We see it as the thing that kids need to be doing. It's not just about entertainment. It is about how they are interpreting the world around them. And one of the best things that you can do as a parent is to get involved in that play. Yes, is it awkward sometimes? You better believe it. I play games with my kids sometimes that just make me feel all funny inside. I mean, I just feel weird when I'm playing it. And the stuff that we come up with, and sometimes I feel so awkward and so out of place that sometimes I just have to look at my kid and say, what do I do? What do I do here? I don't understand how to play this game anymore. Tell me what goes next. What do I do? And give me some idea of how to play this game. And it gets weird. But the reality to it is that it's valuable when we play with our kids. And it's not just because we're playing with them, which is good. It's relationship building in and of itself. It is the sense that we are actively a part of things that they are interested in, what they are doing, and we want to be down in the trenches with them as they're doing these things. And so that's a valuable piece of it, is the relational aspect of it, that we're with our kids while we're doing it. However, there's a secondary side of this. It's where the most beautiful education that your kids can receive ever come from. When you're in the middle of playing with your kids and you're discussing terminologies and things and belief systems and ideologies, it's so, so valuable. Just the other night, I was playing with the kids, and we were working around doing some different stuff, and all the next thing I know, my kids that are typically very respectful and kind to each other all of a sudden just started fissy fussing about who was going to get to hold the gripper, which is just this little, you know, this little gripper that you often see like elderly folks with. They used to pick stuff off the floor, and they were getting where they were fighting about it. And it was just a wonderful opportunity to sit down and talk with the kids about how we take care of each other as a family and how we spend the time to take care and to focus on the needs of other people and not just the needs of ourselves, and how valuable that is. And we wouldn't have had that opportunity if we hadn't been sitting down playing and it turned into that little Miffy fight thing. And so it's a wonderful thing. And I realized that over the year of 2013, I have boosted the amount of playing that I said I would do. And I did it, and I honestly did it. But I retrospectively look back at all the times that either I didn't play with the kids, that I said, maybe later, guys, let's wait on this. I take a look at all of those different things, and I experience a level of guilt. I experience a level of knowing that I betrayed a sense of something I was supposed to do for my kids, in effect doing the very opposite of what I said my kids should do, which is focus on the objectives of other people and figuring out, helping, how do we get them get to what they want and need. I focused too little on that and more on what I needed, which was I needed a break. I needed a rest. And I did that too many times, way too many times this last year. And I experience a level of remorse for that I've lost that. I mean, this sounds so sappy, guys. I'm sorry to even go here with this, but I've lost months and a year of their life in some cases that I can't regain. And that's a weight that is heavy on my heart today, that I have wasted time on stupid crap when I've got kids just sitting there needing me. Man, I told myself I wasn't going to get choked up on this, and I'm not going to, dadgummit. Number two, I yelled too much. Yeah, you heard that right. For all the stuff that I talk about, I'm a yeller. Whenever I really get just absolutely pissed off, and whenever I'm just absolutely enraged or I'm frustrated about whatever's going on in that day, and I'm just totally in the box towards my kids, and I'm just seeing them as objects, and, you know, they're obstacles in my way of having a nice, comfortable evening or whatever else that it is, what do I typically defer to? I go back to the yelling. I shout at them. I use that to get their attention. I'll even try to use it to get their compliance, right? And I yelled way too much at my kids this last year. Way too much. I mean, is there too little? Well, you know, in certain cases of safety, if you're trying to get their attention to get them out of the road, yeah, I mean, I guess I can see that. But I did it way too much in situations that weren't like that. I yelled for dumb stuff, and I'll break this down here in a little bit more as to why, and, you know, what were some of the thinking that was some of the errors in my thinking here in a little bit. But I experienced a genuine remorse at how much I've hollered at my kids. And you know what scares me the most is, about this yelling too much at them, is that I'm experiencing a desensitization to it, because it's considered to be so normal in our culture to pop a little shout off at our kids or to get their attention, to holler at them and stuff like that, that I'm experiencing almost a numbing effect to that. And so, in other words, I feel it in my heart that I'm betraying that sense of what I'm supposed to do for my kids, or in this case, not do, which is not yell. But I'm starting to lose that sensitivity to it. And that worries me. That concerns me more than anything, is that do I ever let something like that get to the point that it becomes like that? There was a meme today that I shared with a couple of folks on Facebook. We had some back and forth today on it. But there was a meme on there that said, like, you know, I'm a spoiled rotten brat or something like that. Or I'm a bully. I'm a spoiled bully. Well, of course I am. You know, we took right the way for parents to spank my butt or something like that. And somebody had marked out the spank my butt part, and it said that, you know, parents have become, you know, buttholes who yell and hit and all that other stuff to get what they want. And, I mean, it just got me thinking, you know, how much some of the remorse that I feel for that. Don't get me wrong, guys. I don't run around yelling at my kids all day, but I mean, how much is too much? Where's that line? How much do I think is acceptable or an unacceptable amount to yell at me on the street whenever I'm driving or at my work from my boss? I mean, where's that level that I would consider to be acceptable? And why do we set different, you know, expectations for our kids, or for us, for our kids? Number three, I've had a bad view of the kids entirely too much. We've talked a little bit about it here, but it's the way we filter our kids, their actions. What do we see them as? How are we seeing them? Are we seeing them as wonderful kids, as just kids being kids? Are we seeing them as babies, just being babies? Or are we seeing them as jerk and delinquents and disrespectful and all these other kinds of things that can go through our heads? How are we seeing our kids? And I've had a bad view of our kids. The Arbinger folks that I got back from that conference in Utah call it their way of being. It's the way that you are seeing another person? Are you seeing them as an object? Or are you seeing them as a person? And I've seen my kids as an object too many times. I've seen them as an obstacle to me, whether it's wanting my, you know, my quiet, peaceful evening and that kind of stuff. I've done that way too much. And I've just had a bad view of my kids. And I'm not talking about like my constant view of my kids is bad. My view of my kids stays very, very positive with them. But I have those moments to where I just get into that rut of not wanting to change how I'm seeing them. And so everything that they're doing, whether it's what they intend to do or not, is getting filtered and interpreted as they're just wanting to be screamy or yelly or whatever else, whiny butts, whiny biscuits, whatever goes through your head. And I did that entirely too much this last year. Number four, I've been too impatient. Now, I know some of you guys are like, yeah, no, duh, Trey. We're all kind of run into this kind of stuff, being impatient with our kids. I get it. Man, I tell you, that's been hurting my heart. At just how impatient I've been with my kiddos. How when they're working on something, or how they're wanting to do something like pour their own cereal or pour their own milk, how impatient I've been with them. How many times have my kids been trying to work on something, and I get so freaking impatient in why they're not figuring it out faster. I've gotten such a hurry to get to church on time that I haven't allotted enough time for my kid to figure out how to tie her shoe. I get so impatient with my kids. And I need to have a longer fuse. Because I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that the level of patience that I'm teaching them to have would not be pleasant if they use that same measure on me. You know what sucks sometimes? Is that my kids have a propensity to have more patience with me than I do with them. You see, that fundamentally really irritates me, right? Because what do I want them to be? If I need to justify being an impatient butthead to my kids, what do I need them to be first? Well, I need them to be impatient buttheads too. And so I find myself getting exceptionally frustrated when I'm just so impatient with them. And they're so patient with me, and they accept me right where I'm at. You know, one of the things that my wife and I have been kind of sitting in this year, starting about a month ago in a year's time, is we really feel led to listen to our kids and what they're trying to teach us. And I don't just mean that like what are they trying to teach them, you know, teach us about themselves. But I just mean what things have we in our quote unquote, I'm air quoting my fingers here, in our quote unquote adulthood have we lost that we should be keeping? You know, for instance, I was mentioning earlier the play, how I don't know how to play anymore like a little kid. That is so dumb. I need that back. I've got to get that skill rekindled. What have we lost as parents? I don't know. Just got me thinking about that. Number five, I've forgotten that my kids are just kids. This one stinks because my kids do a lot of things that make me think, wow, that's incredible. And so I have a tendency to hold a level of expectation for them that I think is often developmentally unfair. I expect them to be acting like. I expect a 5-year-old to be doing what the 7-year-old's doing. I expect a 3-year-old to be doing what the 5-year-old's doing. I expect the 19-month-old to be doing what the 3-year-old is. And it's just not fair. It is just not fair. And I've realized that I have forgotten in a few cases that the kids are just kids. We kind of have a running phrase around our house when our kids do something dumb or they do something kiddie-like, you know, like spill their cup of whatever for the 15th freaking time in the last 3 days, right? Sometimes we'll do something where I'll get frustrated and I'll hear Corey in the other room, Trey, don't forget, it's like they're kids or something. And she'll say that, and there's something about that that just, boom, snaps me out of my box, man. And it brings me back to that reality of what they are. They're little human beings, and they matter. And they're important. Even if they spill their milk or they spill their soda or they spill their juice for the 10th time, they are still little humans. And sometimes I think I forget that. And I have these expectations for them of what they should be doing. I want to share a quote with you guys. It actually came out of some of the conversations that we had over at Facebook. We were talking about that meme that was listed over on Facebook. It said, "Of course we're bullies and disrespectful brats. What did you think would happen when you took away our parents' right to beat our butts?" Somebody marked out that last part and put, "Of course we're bullies and disrespectful brats. What did you think would happen whenever you set the example at home by being a butthole parent who hit, yell, and swear to get your way?" One of our audience members got on and wrote, and her name is Crystal. She wrote, and she quoted this from Robert A. Heinlein. I told you that juvenile delinquent is a contradiction in terms. Delinquent means failing in duty. But duty is an adult virtue. Indeed, a juvenile becomes an adult when and only when he acquires a knowledge of duty and embraces it as dearer than the self-love he was born with. There never was and there cannot be a juvenile delinquent. But for every juvenile criminal, there are always one or more adult delinquents, people of mature years who either do not know their duty or who, knowing it, fail. You see, I get these ideas of what kids should be doing. Well, this one should be doing this by now. Even if I don't think it, you know, in my mind, consciously, it doesn't come out of my mind and say, oh, they should be doing this by this, you know, age and developmental area of growth, whatever. Even though I may not robotically repeat that to myself, there's some part of me that just feels like I shouldn't be dealing with this anymore. But the reality is, our kids are watching us. And when my kids are struggling with those things, it is a failure on my part. Now, does that mean that I've taught them necessarily the bad behavior? No. Some cases, yes. No. Many cases, no. Most cases, yes. It's because I've taught them to be that way. But sometimes it's just a simple fact that I have not taught them otherwise. So sometimes I forget that kids are just kids. Number six, I've expected too much from them. This one kind of dovetails the, you know, we forget that kids are just kids. But sometimes after I forget that they're too, you know, just kids, I expect them to be doing too many things. I expect them to be able to handle too many things, too many emotions. I expect them to just be able to handle that. You know what, Cora? Cora's my three-year-old. You know what, Cora? I mean, you're scared of the dark. You're just going to have to get over it. You know? That's, maybe a kid can do that, but sometimes that's expecting too much from a kid. Why is that? Because you have to teach a kid how to not be afraid of the dark. You have to do that. Dark is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful place. I love the dark. There's so many cool things that come out at night. My daughter Anna, we used to be terrified of it, but we really pitched that the dark is a beautiful place where wildlife abounds. There's so many neat things that come out at night. And we've turned it into where she loved it, but we had to teach her. And I want to get so frustrated. Again, 4 and 5 and 6 all rolled into one. I get so impatient with them, and I forget that she's just a kid, and I expect her to be ready for too much emotionally and mentally. We shouldn't be dealing with this. The dark is not a bad place. We love on you, and we make sure that you feel as safe as possible. Why are we still struggling with this? And I expect too much from them. Number 7, we've I devalued playtime. Now, I know we talked about playing too little, but there's a root cause to the why am I not playing enough? Outside of the fact that I have to grow all the things that are a problem in my life, I'm tired, I've had a rough day, whatever, I've got a podcast to do in a little bit, so I've got to eat, I'm so hungry. Outside of all those things that prevent me from playing enough, sometimes I haven't valued what playtime really is. I've looked at it as not as significant as it needs to be. And I have justified, right? I get this sense, this desire I'm supposed to honor, which is I should play with my kids when they want me to play. But I betray that, and I don't do that thing I'm supposed to do. Well, the first thing that I have to do is I have to start justifying, right? Because you justify whenever you know you're not doing something you should be doing, right? I mean, that's just kind of the way we are. So here's the thing. When I'm doing that, I'm communicating that their playtime is less important in the things that I have in my life. Now, are there certain opportunities and situations where that might be true? Sure, absolutely. But fundamentally, what I am communicating to my kids is what you need is not important. And subsequently, it's really hard for that not to be interpreted. You're not important. Playtime is more valuable than I can ever express. And I crashed and burned on that this year. Number 8, this was suggested by my wife. It's a beautiful thing about having a solid relationship with your spouse. I can just say, hey, what have I screwed up on in parenting this year? And she can hammer them out. And you guys are probably chuckling, ha, Trey, stink on that. And it's not even like that. It wasn't done in poor taste. It was really just I guess there's been this and that and that and this. And it's not offensive. The way she does it, she's not in the box. You know, I'm not an object to her. It's just very educational for me and for her. But she came up with this one, number 8, read way too little to my kids. We spent some money a while back and picked up we really hate the new books that have come out. I mean, just to be honest, I'm tired of reading about fat caterpillars that turn into butterflies. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. We've got that book, right? It's the caterpillar that keeps eating everything alive known to man, including like small children or something like that. And it just keeps getting fatter, but then it turns into a beautiful butterfly. Great story. I'm not dogging on that story. So if you got that book, don't feel like I'm hurting your feelings, because we love that book too. But man, I'm freaking tired of stupid stories like that. I'm tired of stories that are about Frou-Frou the bear going into Frou-Frou land where everything's made of clouds and puffy, you know, marshmallows. And he, you know, his whole entire thing is he falls into a pit of marshmallow goo and he has to get out. You know, dadgummit, until my kids are going to be guaranteed to get stuck into marshmallow pits, I'm like, let's read about something real. And my wife made a brilliant move a while back. She found, hang on, let me go ask her where she found that. Okay, she found that on Amazon, she said. But she found the entire series of the Little House on the Prairie books. And let me tell you, we start reading those to our kids. I freaking love those books. Now, for those of you guys who don't know, I'm a bit of a survivalist slash preparedness type guy. And I'm not talking like, you know, bunkers under the ground. Although I would love to have my own underground bunker. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just, you know, putting away food on the side and those kinds of things. Just to be prepared and ready. What if the stores stop having, you know, groceries? Or frankly, what if we're in a tight spot and we just need some backup food? I mean, we prepare for those kinds of things. We garden, we can. We love that kind of stuff. And so the Little House on the Prairie books are, I mean, that's what it's about. It's about life on a prairie and how difficult that can be and how you prepare for all those things. And so we've loved them because there's an entire section of there that just made Daddy so happy because it's about firearms and how this one particular guy learned that when he went out, he got chased by like a mountain lion on his horse, and he learned the lesson. You never leave without a firearm. And that is kind of that understanding that, you know, he was saying, you know, you may never need it, but you will regret it if you ever do. And as you say, to me, that's a great story. That's way better than, you know, little unicorns that, you know, get stuck in marshmallow goo, right? I mean, that's great. And so we've started reading to our kids that, and the kids love the Little House on the Prairie series. They just think that is great. So I feel like they're learning something because everything is very lesson-like. Everything is about survivalism and that kind of stuff. How could you survive and even thrive in a situation where you can't run down to the nearest, you know, Walmart and pick you up a big thing of steaks or something like that? How do you live and survive? I love that junk. And my kids love that junk. I mean, it's just great. But I have read that stuff to them way too little. Number 9. Not enough time actually teaching. My wife suggested this one as well, and I thought that was brilliant. You know, one of the things that we do here, for those who are unaware, is that we teach a style of schooling called unschooling. And it has been single-handedly the most powerful thing that we've done in an educational sense with our kids. But the thing about it is that you have to be very active and very involved. Everything has to be teaching for you. And it's really easy when you get into this that they kind of go and do their thing and you don't stay enough involved and applied. And a lot of that comes with just being around them. And I back a lot of that up into number 1. And number 7, playing too little and devaluing playtime, because that playtime is where you get that opportunity to do those little life lessons where you teach them about things and about sharing and kindness and thoughtfulness. And it's those areas where you get to do that stuff. What do you believe about money as a family? And it's just absolutely the most rich place that you can get yourself in to those little bitty things like that. And I just have not been taking the time to teach my kids like I should be. To really getting involved, taking them out on walks, talking about the different colors, or why is the sky blue, and talking about the wavelengths of certain colors and why the sky is blue. I'm not doing those things. We're not invoking curiosity as much as we should be. I'm not taking enough time to teach. Now, when I say teach, I'm not talking about lecture teach. All right, children, gather round. Let's talk about the finer things of wavelength and light. No, I'm not talking about it. Sometimes I get done with my voices and even it makes me laugh. But I'm not talking about stuff like that. I'm talking about putting them in an environment to where they desire to learn something else. I'm talking about putting them in an environment that they look at something and it's a conundrum and they want to solve it and you help them solve it. Sometimes you answer the question outright. Sometimes that answer is, and I don't know the answer to that. Let's go look it up on Google. Let's consult the almighty Google. But I did not spend enough time doing that. Number 10, our last one. Now, I want you guys to understand, we've never made it a secret here at the Family Podcast Network that I am very openly accepting and believing in the God of the Christian Bible. That is not what this is about pushing that. I mean, here at the Family Podcast Network, we have devout Christians and proud pagans both. And we love that fact. We consider this, the Family Podcast Network, to be a fully American radio show. And by that, I mean that we accept in the fact that we are all humans, and under the banner of liberty, we are allowed to come here and believe whatever we want to believe. And we unite under the understanding that we want to build better relationships with our kids. We want to take our parenting to the next level with the purpose of removing the stress from parenting. And that is what we believe. But I've never made it a secret, though, what our belief systems are here. And even inside that level of tolerance, look that word up. If you're getting that confused, go look, you know, Webster Dictionary, check out the word tolerance. But even with that said, we have a belief systems here. And for my number 10, I recognize that I didn't pray nearly enough with my kids. And we have a very firm moral belief system that prayer is an amazing thing. And it's not just about praying for things for ourselves, but it's also about learning to expand our mindsets to think outwards. Who needs prayer? Who needs to be prayed for? And that is for us a major thing, and I have not done that nearly enough. There was a period this last year, I was a Jesuit praying with my kids. Every night we'd sit down, we'd talk about what we need to pray for, we'd think about the things we needed to pray for, the people we needed to pray for, and we did it, and we asked for good things for them. But I did not do nearly enough of that. You know, some of you guys who out there who are our proud pagans that we have in this crowd, you know, another way to think about this is that, you know, we didn't honor our moral beliefs. And understanding that moral, I'm defining that as our basic belief system about what's right and wrong. And I believe the right thing for us is to pray. And I didn't honor that with my kids. And so be thinking, you know, in this sense, if you're trying to interpret this and you're like, yeah, Trey, this praying thing's not a big deal to me, just think about it in the sense, is there some moral belief that you guys have as a family that you didn't honor? That's what we're talking about. And I didn't do those things. And I hate saying that I'm ashamed of all these things, because I'm not. I don't carry shame with me because of it. But do I carry a level of remorse, of wasted time, for these 10 things that I did not do in the year 2013? Yeah. Yeah, I do. And it's very motivating. It's very powerful. Because I sit there and I stare at these 10 things and I think, man, what kind of legacy do I say I want to leave behind with my kids? I look at this and I think, you know, for all the talk about wanting to be an excellent parent, I'm being a good one. Here at the Family Podcast Network, if this is your first time to listen into this show, we have a belief system, a saying that we use here that says, what is the number one enemy to great, excellent parenting? It's not bad parents. The number one enemy to excellent parenting is being good parents. We do just enough that we can look at it and say, all right, I did a good job. And we leave that virtue of excellence behind, veiled under this showmanship of, well, at least I did a good job. I didn't kill him, at least. I got him out of the house alive. And we prevent ourselves from experiencing pure excellence because we refuse to acknowledge that we did a good job. I had a good year this year. As a parent, I had a good year. But I look at this, and in all humbleness, I think to myself, I didn't have a great one. I didn't do excellently. I didn't excel at the things that I was doing. And that's a problem for me. That's a problem. So I want to take you guys out today, just a little bit different. Instead of playing our traditional Family Podcast Network extra music, I want to leave you guys out on a hip-hop and rap mogul, if you will. Eminem, regardless of what you think of this guy, he writes a song called Not Afraid that I think has a pretty powerful meaning behind it. I'm not sitting here saying I endorse all of his music. I'm certainly not saying I endorse the meanings behind all his songs, but I am going to play a little clip from you from one of his more recent ones that I think is fantastic. I think he's onto something when it comes to what he's doing in his life. I think he got messy, like humans sometimes do. And often do, maybe I should say. And I think he's figuring something out. And so I am going to say that we're going to play a song by Eminem. He often does have some words that some of you guys might find offensive. If you do, send me all the emails you want. It doesn't matter. I mean, get over it. The song is powerful enough that I think that we can put that aside for a bit to try to see if we can pull the meaning out of it. So anyway, I'm going to play for you guys real quick, just a little small clip. This is about in the middle of the song. I highly recommend you go listen to it if you ever get a chance. Again, remember, he is a rapper, and he comes from a culture where certain words aren't necessarily a big deal. And even if you don't agree with him, I think there's something we can pull out of that. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Don't forget to come join Jeff and I this Friday as we do the Real Family Guys podcast. So again, I want to encourage you guys with this song to remember that I think Eminem's bringing some of his own junk to the table when he talks in this song. And so, I mean, don't get caught up on any direct relation. I think he's talking about getting clean in terms of substance abuse, etc. But I think there's still a connection that we can all learn from. And in that we've got our mess as parents. We've got our junk as parents, the things that we come to. We've all got our top 10 lists. And the reality is, what are we going to do about it? And are we gonna shy away in fear or resistance from fixing these things, from working on these things, from growing and getting better? Or are we going to bite down and kick this stuff in the junk and get it done and do the things that we know is the right things to do, honor those senses and those desires that we have to not betray ourselves and the things we know are the right thing to do with our kids? Are we going to stand up? Are we going to be afraid? And I think that's what Eminem really brings to the table. So anyway, as we roll this out today, I hope you guys enjoy this song by Eminem, Not Afraid.
Get clean, I did it for me. Admittedly, I probably did it subliminally for you, so I could come back a brand new me. You helped see me through, and don't even realize what you did, cause believe me, you, I've been through the ringer, but they can do little to the middle finger. I think I got a tear in my eye, I feel like the king of my world. Haters can make like